Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bowls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere you can find podcasts. Make sure you leave us a five-star review on iTunes. If you want to advertise with us, email us at lockedonbowls@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bowls. Like us on Facebook at Locked On Bowls. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 Score. And we've got a guest from Sports Illustrated, Rob Mahoney. After the Bowls win over the Cavs, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Good one to watch.
Big game, big guest for us. The Bulls got a 111-105 win over the Cavs. Dwayne Wade said it was a bad loss to the Lakers. This would be classified as a big win, I would think. Jimmy Butler stopped short of saying it proves the Bulls as a contender or anything like that. I think his answer in the locker room right now was just hell no.
Yeah.
But Rob, what did you make of this first battle of the year between the Bulls and Cavs?
I mean, it's the most convincing that the Bulls have played yet, I think. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's still always going to be kind of this lingering waiting for the shoe to drop with this team just because some of the pieces you still think in your head, how is this fitting together? How is this working? How are the shooting numbers holding in particular ways? But they have the ability to attack from so many different angles. When they maintain their pace, when they offensive rebound like they do tonight and in most of their winning games, this is still a really good team. I mean, I don't think they're a beat the Cavs on a consistent basis kind of team. Cleveland's pick-and-roll defense was a mess tonight. Their back line was basically never there. But when the Bulls are aggressive, they can push teams, they can get through, they can get wins like this one.
I'll throw it out there for both of you guys, but did we learn anything from this that matters for the next time they play, and maybe if they match up sometime in the playoffs? Because this was a game the Bulls scored 78 points in the paint, which is ridiculous. The Bulls' notion that they don't need to shoot three-pointers and they'll still be okay, they kind of proved it a little bit tonight, but Sean, Rob, does any of this matter next time? Like, can this be replicated?
Well, I mean, I think this is kind of easy to gloss over because in certain matchups, they weren't really challenged by anybody in the Eastern Conference playoffs last year. And then obviously in the finals, they played against the Warriors, whose best work they do when they play small. But for certain matchups, the Cavs really missed. You talked about how many points the Bulls scored in the paint. And the Cavs really don't have any kind of a rim protector or any really real inside presence like that. They, for certain matchups, they miss Timofey Mozgov more than maybe people want to admit.
Maybe so. And you know, ultimately, it is a question of how much that really matters.
It doesn't.
If they're going to roll over every team in the East, it's more important to have the Channing Frye than the Mozgov. But, I mean, I do think we've seen, you know, over the last couple of weeks, shades of how the Bulls might play small in certain situations. You know, Taj Gibson at center or Nikola Mirotic at center for, you know, spot minutes tonight, which was not so pretty.
No.
But that's something they need to prove that they can do, just to have the versatility, just to have the matchup flexibility. And I think this was a solid step in a team that's proven, obviously, in the Cavs that they are successful that way, that they can play that way. And if the Bulls are hanging with them with Jimmy Butler at the 4, Taj Gibson at the 5, I think that's something. I don't know. It's a huge data point, but it's a data point.
Well, and I have to give Fred Hoiberg a lot of credit for shaking up the rotation and being willing to kind of experiment with stuff like this. This is a risky game to experiment like that. Usually, you know, if you want to throw weird lineups out there and kind of see what sticks, you can do that in a blowout or a game against a team that's not as good as you. Doing this in a game against the Cavaliers after their worst loss of the season against the Lakers, he switched up a lot of things in the rotation. I give him credit for not going with the Portis Mirotic lineup that I wrote about the other day that's been such a disaster for them. The Nico at the 5 thing, like you said, didn't go so well for the 2 minutes that was out there. But, you know, Fred quickly recognized that wasn't going well, and he put Taj in instead. And then after he put Taj in, they had that lineup that was Rondo, Wade, Cannon, Jimmy, and Taj. And that lineup actually was pretty good at both ends of the floor, surprisingly.
Yeah, and I thought this was, for an early December basketball game, this was great stuff. Like, this was high-level basketball. I'm still just astounded that LeBron played 44 minutes and 40 seconds in a game that was decided in regulation a night after they played. It was the back end of a back-to-back.
Well, especially
so, like, this game meant something to both teams, you know what I mean?
Well, to be fair, LeBron played maybe 3 defensive minutes in this game. I mean, he was matched up with Isaiah Cannon for a reason,
true,
for large stretches, you know?
I liked how Dwayne Wade and LeBron James obviously was the subplot of the night. First time they've played each other when Dwayne Wade's in his hometown Bulls uniform there. And before the game, of course, I don't know what time you got here exactly, Rob. But
you weren't here for the
scene.
I chose to abstain
from the listeners.
Cubs of Palooza.
It was ridiculous. LeBron James paid off his bet to Dwayne Wade for the Cubs beating the Indians in the World Series, and LBJ showed up in a full Cubs uniform, no cleats or spikes, but otherwise was there in his Cubs uniform. Clark the Cub, their mascot, was there. And what, 50, 60 media members, everyone, hundreds of
more
people
media,
waiting?
More media members, and not even all the media members who were at this game were waiting to take pictures of LeBron in the Cub uniform, but more media members were waiting to take pictures of LeBron. And this is counting because this was an ESPN game, so they had 3 million camera people plus, you know, producers and whoever. So there was more people waiting in that little tunnel to take pictures of LeBron coming in than there have been at most NBA games I've covered that aren't like the playoffs or the finals or something. It was just absolutely
nuts. I walked in and it felt like a playoff game, so I got a kick out of that. Dwayne Wade said he thought LeBron looked like he could actually play baseball, in a testament to his athleticism.
LeBron probably could actually play baseball.
Why not?
But, I mean, back to the basketball point of it, what'd you make of the LeBron-Dwayne Wade subplot? Rob, I found it fun that Dwayne Wade guarded LeBron a lot more than I thought he would. Jimmy Butler was okay with Dwayne just saying, hey, you know, I want to get some run at him. Dwayne Wade had 24 points. Really good game for him. LeBron was brilliant with 27 points, 13 assists, but the Cavs had turnover problems. He was part of that. But what'd you make of that matchup?
I mean, it is a lot of fun, for sure. I did like that, you know, they toyed around with those matchups a little bit, get Wade some time there. Had Jimmy Butler on Kyrie Irving, which makes a ton of sense. Like, that kind of flexibility is nice to have, but those one-on-one matchups, I mean, Wade especially getting better of LeBron on a couple occasions, sneaking by him for a layup there to close the game, I mean, those are just great moments. And, like, I get turned off by ISO basketball as much as anyone when it's not done well or it's not done right or it's just kind of stale or staid, but this, I mean, these are two guys who are great at it, and two guys who you can obviously tell, you know, all the history between them, everything that they've had together as teammates and as opponents and as rivals and friends. I mean, this is why we watch.
You know what's in play right now, and I think we might be getting a little bit of ahead of ourselves here, but we have never had a LeBron versus Wade playoff series before. And this year I don't think it would be the 1-8, because I think at this point we can say the Bulls are better than the 8 seed in the East. But, you know, maybe if the Bulls are in the 4-5 matchup, they win their first round matchup, they play the Cavs in the second round. We've never gotten back before when LeBron was still in Cleveland the first time and Wade was in Miami. They never played each other in the playoffs. If Miami had gotten past Toronto in the second round last year, we would have gotten that in the conference finals, but we have never gotten that, and I think it's a real possibility that we might get that in the second round or something this year.
And that's a playoff matchup LeBron said last year he'd like to have, I believe, too. Dwayne hasn't commented quite as much on it, but LeBron has, I think.
I think the only trick there would be, especially in terms of that one-on-one matchup, I think you see a lot more Jimmy Butler on LeBron.
Yeah.
Obviously, LeBron's not going to be guarding Isaiah Cannon so much in a playoff series. Like, that it may be a little less ISO fun, but in terms of the storylines, in terms of those guys quoting back and forth each other, I can go for that.
Should the Bulls play small more often? Like, is this something that they can do? Do they have to do it against the Cavs because of the matchups, or can they do this and be the aggressor and play small against teams that aren't as good as the Cavs who might have more size? Because we've written extensively, talked extensively on this podcast about the Portis Mirotić pairing not working. They never saw the floor together tonight. Portis didn't even play. DNP coach's decision. And the Bulls really, I mean, they went 9 deep, but Jaren Grant only played 6 minutes. Denzel Valentine just shy of 4. So it was kind of a 7-man group there, and the Cavs really only went 8 deep. But should the Bulls do that, or should that be matchup-based?
I think it should be more matchup-based, and some of it's this matchup allows for it because of what they have going at the four, and you can trust that if you have Jimmy Butler out there guarding fours, that he's not going to get beat up a ton because they're not going to power post Kevin Love possession after possession after possession. Otherwise, it's just, the offensive rebounding is just so important to what the Bulls are and what they can be, and to take that away for longer stretches, I think, puts them in a dangerous situation just because they don't have that many capable shooters, even the guys who can shoot. And Isaiah Cannon, for example, I think he's shooting like 30% on threes for the season. So he's a good hypothetical threat. But if you're going to be taking bigs off the floor, I think you need to be replacing them with either high-skill players or great shooters. The Bulls don't have a lot of those on their bench. They have guys who can be good on one particular night. I don't think the bench on the whole was very good tonight. It was basically the starters carrying them in different kind of variations. But it's something they can toy with. And again, like, this is what the regular season is for Hoiberg yo-yoing these lineups, figuring out which combinations work and don't against different kinds of opponents. I think this was a good opportunity to try this stuff out, but as a more regular thing, maybe not.
And they're going to have more options once they get everybody healthy. We should just note real quick that this morning, we haven't gotten a definitive update about whether he's been cleared yet, but it seems like it's trending in the direction of Doug McDermott being cleared for contact. He didn't play tonight, obviously. He's not playing tomorrow in Dallas. He might play on the back half of the 4 and 5 nights, but once they get him back And once they get Michael Carter-Williams back in a few weeks, they're going to have a lot more flexibility to put out different lineup combinations, because those guys have both have skill sets that the Bulls bench doesn't really have right now.
Yeah, and the Bulls, we should note too, in addition to being without McDermott, Michael Carter-Williams in Dallas on Saturday night, won't have Dwayne Wade resting on the second night of back-to-back. But the good news is, even though Dwayne Wade's not playing, you can still bet on that game at BetDSI.com, because basketball is being played. And if you're ready to get in the action, you need to go check out BetDSI.com. More than 20 years in the business, one of the top-rated businesses, safe. I've played there, and it's great. BetDSI's great basketball special right now is sign up today and get $10 off, or get $10 free to try their service. And they have 100% bonus on your first deposit. They've got great customer service, easy to get them on the phone, get your problem solved if you have any. And the biggest thing is fast and easy payment of winnings. So whether you got the Bulls winning or the Mavs covering, whatever it is, you can get your money quickly. Holiday season, Christmas coming up, more money to spend on all your friends and family. Hundreds of basketball wagers to choose from, football too. We're getting to stretch in the NFL season. There's UFC bets, there's college football bets, anything you want. BetDSI has live in-game wagering on football, basketball, and many major sporting events. And you can play virtually everything there. So go to BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com. And you need to use the promo code BULLS10, just how it sounds, BULLS10 at BetDSI.com, and get your free wager and start winning today. What else in this game stood out to you guys? Whether it was basketball related, whether it's big picture related, post game comments, anything else?
Well, I think we have to talk about Taj Gibson.
Oh, that's true.
This was
magnificent.
He was, I mean, I think he made his first 9 shots of the game. What did he end up?
23 points, 10 of 13 from the field, 11 rebounds, total domination down there.
But he started the game off 9 for 9. He was, I mean, he's just, I mean, there's just not really anything to say about Taj Gibson at this point. He's one of those guys, he never really gets a lot of attention nationally. He never draws attention to himself. He shows up night in and night out, does his job, plays both ends of the floor, plays through injuries. He seems pretty healthy right now, but he's played hurt all the time, never complained, doesn't complain about starting or coming off the bench. He's just one of those guys. Tonight just showed like how valuable he is and how much the Bulls are going to miss him if he leaves in free agency this summer.
Yeah, I mean, I think this season on the whole he's been especially good. And, you know, nights like this where, especially when the Cavs are going small, he's guarding Channing Frye in some of the situations, which is not an easy job. Really challenging his foot speed, really has to be there rotationally for the Bulls to hold up on defense, and he does it all. And he's probably my favorite quick spin move out of the post in the league right now in terms of really getting guys baseline. He just torched Kevin Love with that early in this one. But really fun to watch. He's been great all year, and I mean, one of the more emphatic dunkers, which you can always appreciate.
And he had what was probably going to be an emphatic dunk late in the first half. Missed it. Fred Hoiberg, he kind of went crazy on the sidelines there. And as the ball, like, spring backwards, they called a foul on it for what it would have been his first miss, but he got fouled on it. And he almost had that. But it just kind of showcased his aggressiveness all night. And, you know, Taj and LeBron have gone at each other so many times on the same floor through these years, whether it's Bulls, Cavs, even before LeBron went to the Heat. And then when he was in Miami, those playoff matchups, and again a couple of years ago in the playoffs, like, Taj almost just has, he, like, shakes his head when you ask him about LeBron, because, like, it's just that obstacle that's always there. And I think, like, Taj knows how difficult it is to beat LeBron, but he also has experienced these regular season wins, so he's very measured and guarded, I think, when he talks about it. But you could tell, like, this win kind of meant something to him, especially after that bad loss for the Bulls the other night, it seemed like.
Well, this game obviously meant more to the Bulls than it did to the Cavs. I mean, are we all on the same page here? I mean, as much as, you know, we're looking at the Cavs and saying, you know, okay, they don't have any rim protection. They had some pretty sloppy turnovers tonight. There were several different times somebody just throws a pass and it just sails out of bounds and completely misses the target. The Cavs are just bored and mailing it in the regular season, right? We're not worried about them at all, are we?
Not really. I mean, they've shown that even in the playoffs, they can kind of get away with it depending on the opponent. I mean, even in that series against Toronto where the Raptors are getting a couple games from them, it seemed like just a matter of time and really just kind of a snap of the finger. And even this game felt like, even going into 3 or 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, it's like, oh, this is one of those games that the Cats are just going to win. You know, Kyrie's going to make a couple crazy shots. LeBron's going to do his thing the last couple minutes and they'll do it. And every game is kind of within reach in that way. You know, they rarely get just, come, you know, waxed or demolished. They're always kind of within 8, 6, 10 points. going into critical stretches. That's always going to be there for them, always within arm's reach when they're not just completely dominating. So I wouldn't be too worried.
Right, and especially also, I mean, just knowing how LeBron is, I thought this was a game they were going to come out really motivated to win. It's, you know, it's on national TV. They got blown out by the Clippers last night. They had a pretty bad loss to Milwaukee a couple nights ago, but also, like, this just seemed like the kind of game, as soon as I was watching the Clippers game last night, I was just thinking, LeBron is going to come out and try to drop 50, and this is just going to get really ugly for the Bulls, but it wasn't.
Yeah, and we'd also be remiss if we didn't bring up Rajon Rondo, who we've been hard on at times in this podcast. First triple-double as a Bull,
yeah.
15 points.
And he was good, too. It wasn't just like a he-put-up-numbers type of
thing. He got into the heart of the defense quite a bit, which I guess it shouldn't be shocked because, like, Kyrie doesn't always apply himself defensively. And it was national TV, Rondo night.
Right.
Like, that's what he does. That's the running joke in the NBA sometimes. But there's definitely a basis behind that, too. And certainly had good Rondo tonight. I guess, can he keep this up? And when he does, like, can I guess bigger picture, can the Bulls starters keep this up? Because the bench, again, provided very, very little tonight. The starters playing a lot of minutes, scoring almost all the points. We talked about the bench, how bad they were the last few games. Like, can Rondo and Jimmy and D-Wade take on this burden and responsibility on a, not nightly basis at this rate, but that much burden and responsibility?
I mean, I think it depends on how you stagger the rotations, too, where obviously those three guys are going to be playing with each other a lot, but the Bulls also found opportunities to get Rondo out, get Cannon in there, and even if he's not doing anything, even if he's not shooting, not making any shots, if you have LeBron sitting on Cannon in the corner and LeBron's out of the picture and you get to run that pick and roll freely, that's a win for the Bulls. And so you're going to find opportunities where, you know, and Rondo really was pretty spectacular tonight, I think, by his standards. And I don't know whether it's a national TV thing or a there were no shot blockers at all in his way thing, but a Rondo who's willing to take layups is such an improvement. And it's one of those things where he's getting to a point where he's not really great at finishing, especially when any kind of defender is there, but he has to take them and he has to try, or else, you know, teams will start playing him and really do play him for that wraparound pass, for killing his dribble. They know he doesn't want to shoot basically in any situation that he's not forced to. So when he actually will willingly take those shots, I think it does the Bulls a great deal of good.
Now, before we go, the Bulls go to Dallas tomorrow to play the Mavericks. They won't have Dwayne Wade. They still won't have Doug McDermott. Rob, you're a Dallas guy. This is your first year in Chicago, living here, covering games here. But you've been in Dallas for the last several years. I know that's a team that you've covered for a while and followed for a while. Like, what's your take on kind of this Dallas season? It hasn't gone very well. Obviously, Dirk's hurt right now. But, you know, where do you kind of see them at? Like, is there anything that, you know, Bulls fans who are listening to this and maybe haven't watched the Mavericks as much should watch for? Or like what's your general read on kind of where they are right now?
They're a mess, and a lot of it's injury-related. They're a team that going into the year, best-case scenario, they were going to be maybe like three shot creators short of a functional offense.
Sure.
Yeah, like it was basically a situation where, you know, I think case in point, you look at the tail end of last season where a couple of guys were out. They were basically shoestringing games with J.J. Barea just carrying the offensive load and working off of Dirk spacing. Now you take Dirk spacing off the floor. He's had an Achilles thing all year. J.J. Barea's been out of the lineup. Now it's, you know, Seth Curry missing games. It's every guy who could conceivably handle the ball. Devin Harris has been out perpetually over the last couple of years. Darren Williams. You're really putting a lot of pressure on Wes Matthews, who can't separate from guys anymore. You're putting a lot of pressure on Justin Anderson. You know, it really is a tough spot, and they just don't have the horses to really compete with many good teams right now. They're trying. They certainly will work hard, and they'll strap together with duct tape and everything that they possibly, you know, Rick Carlisle has in his toolbox to make this team work. It just doesn't on a very regular basis offensively. I think defensively they kind of scrap along. They can do okay, but I wouldn't expect them to be able to keep up with the Bulls.
I was going to say, so you say the Bulls should win Saturday night. That even Dwayne Wade.
Even without Dwayne Wade. I think the Bulls have more talent, but I mean, you never know. The other night the Lakers were coming off four games in five nights, and they were missing D'Angelo and Swaggy, and the Bulls somehow still managed to lose that game. I mean, the thing that's interesting about this Mavericks team is this is kind of our first look, because Dirk is out right now, and they really just don't have anything because they haven't drafted well over the last few years. They don't really have a lot of young prospects or any, you know, future. It's like, you know, this is kind of what it's going to look like in a couple of years when Dirk isn't there anymore. And I know Cuban has been very vocal about wanting to not tank, but, like, he doesn't have any choice in the matter. Even if this team decides they're not going to tank and try to be competitive, I don't think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league no matter what they decide they want to do.
Yeah, it's always kind of a bad sign when your owner comes out and says, we're not tanking right now. Like, the season's not going how you want it to go.
Right. And the optics, I mean, the owner will always say that. The general manager will always say that. And
unless you're Sam Hinkie.
Yeah, unless you're Sam Hinkie. But it really doesn't matter. As long as they're bad enough to get a decent draft pick, which is what they need, then that can give you some life. And Harrison Barnes, to be fair, has had a pretty strong season overall, certainly better in that isolation role than I would have expected him to be.
That's hashtag Ames Mafia.
Ames Mafia.
Hashtag Ames Mafia.
Ames Mafia. Former future Bull Harrison Barnes.
Mm. There you go.
It's inevitable.
No, it was inevitable until the Rondo and Wade stuff happened. This was kind of before we started doing this podcast. Like, our running joke all of last season was going to be that the Bulls were going to have all this cap space, they were going to lose Joe and Powell, and they were just going to throw all this money at Harrison Barnes because he's from Ames,
right?
So, and because that's where, you know, that's where Fred Hoiberg coached and played, obviously, and sure, that's where Gar Forman used to be an assistant. And there's, you know, there's just a lot of Iowa, and Kirk Heinrich is from Iowa, there's just a lot of Iowa ties with this franchise. So that was just kind of our thing, was, you know, we just were assuming that that's what the Bulls' big offseason move was going to be. So he's still honorary Ames Mafia, even though he's in Dallas.
We'll get Rob out of here after a quick power ranking. So, of where does the most of the credit for the Bulls' success so far, kind of revitalization, go from last year to this year? You give it to Dwayne Wade for everything he's come in and provided leadership, and on the court, Jimmy Butler's ascension to kind of the next level. Fred Hoiberg maybe reinventing himself as a coach a little bit, the front office for some good offseason signings right now that were highly questioned at the time. Other people, I mean, what do you make of all that, all those moving parts?
I mean, I don't think any of this works without Jimmy Butler playing as one of the best players in the NBA. And that's one of those things where when you have that guy, your spacing needs to be good, but it doesn't need to be super tight all the time. Your defense, you know, needs to, your rotations need to be good, but it doesn't need to be, you know, on a string every possession, just because Jimmy's going to cover for so much of that when he's playing this well. We'll see if he does over the course of the year. I mean, he's carrying a big workload night to night. I think infrastructurally, guys like Wade are so critical, and he's one of those. I would love to look into kind of an alternate universe where Dwayne Wade doesn't come to the Bulls, and it's the Rondo Butler Bulls, which has a very different feel. And, you know, they're trying to figure out what to do with the two and kind of scrapping things together there. But ultimately, just, I mean, the locker room has such a different vibe because he's there, and it's just, he fills every room he walks into in terms of leadership and presence and influence, and guys listen to him and they go to him. And that kind of stuff just can't be understated. And it sounds so silly and mystical if you're, you know, someone who just likes watching basketball. And, okay, this is, you know, what their rotation looks like. This is what they're executing. This is what their plays look like. But that kind of influence, I mean, it may be the most important thing in the league in terms of just understanding how teams operate. And Wade, I mean, he did that for years in Miami, basically ran that franchise in terms of its day-to-day operations of running a team in a locker room. And he's doing some of that here. It's a different kind of role, and that's important, too, in terms of being willing to let Jimmy Butler do a lot of stuff, being willing to let Rajon Rondo do a lot of stuff. But that, it really can't be discounted.
And the other thing, you know, the other thing, I mean, I think the two major factors in their success are the two things you said, which are Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade. We have to give some credit to Gar Forman and John Paxson. They have done a good job. There's still, you know, room for debate over, you know, whether the Rondo thing is going to pan out, but they did well with the Derrick Rose trade, Robin Lopez. I mean, Jaren Grant has looked good at times, but more importantly, just getting Robin Lopez, who's been so solid for them. He's been their starting center. That's a position they just haven't had to worry about this season. They were able to make the moves they needed to make to clear cap space to sign Dwayne Wade when that move presented itself, and they were able to convince him to come, you know, when he was thinking about leaving Miami. And then even just little around the margin stuff, you know, you saw them do the Michael Carter Williams for Tony Snell trade. You know, we'll still have to see how MCW looks, but they were able to get something for Tony Snell, and they filled a need because nobody was really impressing them as a backup point guard. Out of training camp, they've done a good job really just kind of playing the hand that's dealt to them in terms of who's available and what opportunities they have, and I think we have to give them credit for that.
Absolutely. And as Sean mentioned, Bulls are doing well. That's 11-7 now, with a very winnable game in Dallas on Saturday night. I think we'll be back. Podcast probably Monday night after the Trailblazers game as the Bulls finish up or continue their streak of 4 games in 5 nights. We greatly thank Rob Mahoney for joining us. You can follow Rob on Twitter at Rob Mahoney.
That's the
is
one.
Is that right?
Read his work at Sports Illustrated, obviously.
You're part of the crossover.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Crossover.
Tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, the crossover is mainly just kind of a little bit of a reorganization, a little bit of a rebranding in terms of kind of, we changed some of what we're focusing on and what we're doing. Otherwise, it's kind of, you know, if you love Lee Jenkins, if you love Chris Ballard, you're going to want to come to the crossover, si.com/NBA. You know, buy a subscription to our magazine,
yeah,
if you will. Let me show.
That's just, I mean, just those two names. I think it's pretty hard to find a better NBA staff at any outlet than Sports Illustrated besides Rob. I mean, you just mentioned Lee Jenkins, the best NBA feature writer in the business, Chris Ballard. And then also guys like Ben Golliver, Andrew Sharp. There's
absolutely
just, there's so many great NBA writers at SI. Like, every single one of the guys they have on covering the league is basically a must-read every time they write something.
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Cody Westerlund. Follow Sean at Hyken. Email us with basketball questions. Any advertising inquiries, always welcome at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com or on Facebook at LockedOnBulls. And most of all, as always, subscribe. Tell your friends to subscribe.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes. Make sure you go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. We're getting you the big national writers and the big national publications. You better give us a 5-star review out of the deal. But you can also find us on Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, anywhere you can find podcasts. Do that. Check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. Email us if you want to advertise with us, all that good stuff. Take it easy, guys. Rob, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Napa
know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.